Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dealmaker Show. So today we have a fantastic founder that has a really inspiring journey, actually. You know, we're going to be talking about his journey of going, you know, he actually started two companies that didn't work out so well before he ended up really leading and riding the rocket ship that he's on now, you know, which was a result of all the craziness that he was seeing when building his previous two companies. And he wanted to put an end to that. And again, we're going to be talking about the building, the scaling, really creating something in an industry that you have no idea about, which is really spectacular. But again, I don't want to make you wait any longer. And without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, David Garca Aceves. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Alejandro. Thank you for having me. Very excited to be here.
So born and raised in Guadalajara, Mexico. Give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up for you?
I would say, first of all, it was great. I feel I had a very happy childhood and very fortunate. I grew up here. I was born and raised, as you said, here in Guadalajara, in a middle-class family in Mexico. And I grew up about or around some financial difficulties. My father went bankrupt when I was 10 years old, approximately. So I grew up around some financial difficulties and money constraints. And that ended up inspiring my journey as a founder, because I'm now on a mission to solve or improve the financial relationship that people have. So that was a little bit of it.
I know that in your case, you had the opportunity of, you know, seeing some financial hurdles that that you were experiencing your parents go through, and, you know, getting into debt and things like that, that really made you who you are today. So I'm sure that was not easy.
It was not easy, as you said. There were a lot of constraints around growing up. There was no extra money. I saw my parents struggle with debt quite a lot. But as you said, that I think that formed me as a person and influenced me as a person and now as a founder. You know this very good, but resilience, it's an essential characteristic of every successful founder, because it's not easy. It's never easy. And I think I built up that resilience as I was growing up around some difficulties. And now, looking backwards, I'm very happy and thankful that I grew up that way, seeing all of my parents' sacrifices. And at the same time, my parents sacrificed a lot so that I could stay in private schools, private university. So even though I had those constraints, I was also seeing other people, classmates, friends that came from successful business families, and I saw that was what was possible through entrepreneurship, and I wanted to aim for that. So that was a bit of what influenced me and resulting in me starting a company.
So let's talk about that too, because, you know, being surrounded by so successful people in Mexico, right? In it's amazing when you go to one of those universities or when you go to one of those schools as well, like the people that have money, I mean, it's crazy money. So how was that for you to, like, being able to see some patterns on some people that were having success and what you were seeing that was working and what you were getting inspired by? What were you seeing, like, being surrounded by that, you know, also level of wealth?
Yeah, I mean, it was very interesting, because I think when you're seeing that, like, some people get, I would say, like, they feel bad that they're not in the same situation and they can even be angry or whatever. But in my case, for me, it was just seeing what was possible. Like, seeing that in a country like Mexico, with all of the political difficulties and social difficulties, it's still possible to build successful businesses. And it's still possible to build them the right way. And as you said, you can get to a very interesting level of wealth, but also impact. It's a large market. There are very large opportunities. So for me, it was most about seeing what was possible and trying to aim for that.
It sounds like you wanted to be an entrepreneur, you know, early on. I mean, you had made a decision, you know, I guess when you were a kid and you wanted to really, you know, take it to another level, especially financially. Now, in your case, after you graduated from university, you decided to go to work for IBM. So why IBM instead of, like, getting going, you know, with your entrepreneurial journey right away?
Yeah, actually, I mean, that's a great question. It was a matter of, I needed to have a job also for, it was more like a financial decision. I needed to get to start working from very early on my doing my bachelor's degree. So I started working since I was, I think, in the second year of college. I had to work in different companies. And then I think I was like a year and a half before graduation, I got this full-time job, IBM. And then I continued for the next couple of years after grad. But this was mostly a financial decision. I needed to help my parents pay some of the tuition fee of my university. So that's why I started working for IBM. And then I found it to be an interesting school in many ways. So I stayed there for a couple of years until I thought like I cannot continue down this path. The corporate work is not for me. And that's when I decided to make the jump and left IBM.
So you did a couple of companies before, you know, really riding the rocket ship of Digit. And they, unfortunately, as they say, you know, you either succeed or you learn. So with those two companies, what happened?
Well, the first one was a short stint. I was actually, that was not my idea. I was invited to co-found a company in the advertising space, like out-of-home advertising space. And the main lesson for that one, from that one was that you shouldn't start a company you're not passionate about. I really don't like out-of-home advertising. I don't like seeing billboards on the streets. And I was trying to build something in that space. And I was definitely not passionate about building that company. And precisely for many reasons, they were not the right partners. It was not the right industry for me. There were many reasons, which I think that caused that company not to succeed. But above all, what I learned is that you should only start a company that you're really passionate about building. And then the second company was in the fraud prevention space for credit cards and debit cards. So that was getting closer to fintech, which I was really interested in. And I had a fraud on my credit card as I was trying to build the other company. I started thinking about like how fraud prevention worked and try to build something in that space. But then in that case, what we learned was that market and the opportunity didn't allow for venture scale. There are very few banks in Mexico, like compared to the US, in which you have thousands of banks and credit unions and now fintech companies. In Mexico, you only have about 50 banks. Out of those 50 banks, not all of them issue consumer cards or retail cards. So the space was very, very small. And as I was talking to banks and getting closer to banks to sell that product, I noticed that it made a lot more sense for banks to build that product, fraud prevention products, themselves. Each of them had their own authorization processes and flows. And so we decided to stop building that company. And that's what ended up happening. Every bank now has their own fraud prevention tools. Like you can turn your card on and off, and you have some parameters that you can define inside each of the bank's mobile apps. So the second lesson was that I wanted to build something in a space that was large enough to allow for venture scale, and you need to target the right market. And you need to be honest about it. When you find that the market is not there and it's not large enough, you need to be humble enough to stop the path that you're following and switch directions.
But what about also switching directions into a segment that you have absolutely no background, no knowledge about?
Yeah, I mean, like that's what ended up happening with Digit. As I was building these two companies, I thought I had saved enough money to allow me for 6 months or 9 months of not having a formal salary or stable income. But I spent all of my savings building these two companies. It took longer than I had originally planned. It was like about a year and a half that I had no income whatsoever. So I spent all of my savings and ended up trapped in credit card debt. And I was paying a 70% interest rate to my BBVA card. It's funny because I listened to your episode with Renola Planch from Lending Club and Upgrade. And he mentioned that what inspired the creation of Lending Club back then was that he saw that he was being charged 18% on his credit card and was only getting like 2% on his savings account. In the case of Mexico, you get 0% on your savings account or checking account, but you're being charged 70, 90, 100, 150% on your credit card. So it's even more absurd than it is in the US or other developed markets. But I was paying this 70% interest rate that made it virtually impossible to pay it off. I had a great credit score. I had an impeccable payment record. I had shown willingness and ability to pay, but I was still paying those type of rates. So I started questioning why that was happening in Mexico, and we decided to do something about it now through Digit, which is a company that is now taking off and it's going down the right path. And as you said, we had no previous industry experience. We had never built a company in finance, banking, lending. We had no previous jobs related to the industry. And that was both pretty good, but also had some challenges. It was pretty good because I think if we were industry insiders, we had never thought about building a company in which it was possible to offer fair rates to consumers and at the same time build a profitable and sustainable business. So that, let's say, I would say we were probably even naive back then, but that forced us to start with a low or fair interest rates and then reverse engineer the business so that it was a profitable and successful and sustainable business down the road. So we had to build, using technology, build all the operational infrastructure so that we were so efficient that we could translate those savings to consumers, build the right underwriting model, build the right customer acquisition avenues, everything we need to build so that fair rates were possible while building a successful business. On the other hand, we also needed to get that industry experience and knowledge somewhere. So that forced us to knock on many doors, talk to many people with that industry experience. That led to amazing conversations with very senior people from Lending Club, for example, very senior people from SoFi. The former president and CFO of SoFi ended up investing at the company very early on and became a great advisor to the company. And so we knocked on every door that we could. We also learned a lot by doing. We also learned a lot by reading and doing research. But I think it was key for us not to have industry experience for this specific company.
Well, probably if you would have known what it would have taken, you would have been like, no way, we're starting something like that, no? So I guess, David, question that comes to mind here, so that the people that are listening, really get it, as well, is Digit. What's the business model? How do you guys make money?
Yeah, so Digit does credit card debt refinancing for prime and near-prime consumers in Mexico. So for customers that have shown this willingness and ability to pay, have good credit scores, formal jobs, formal education, predictable income streams, that are paying very high interest rates, as I said, 70 to 150%, we offer them a loan at a lower rate, much lower rate, typically at least about half of what they are paying to the bank. And we make money on that loan that we issue. So the main revenue stream or most important revenue stream for Digit now is interest revenue.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. There's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on, when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of cycle. So again, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
You were talking about it earlier, the raising capital. How much capital have you guys raised to date, and what has been the journey to of going through raising the money?
Yeah, that's a great question. We have raised about $6 million in equity money, in venture capital money. Mm. The path was interesting. Going back to not having industry experience or startup experience, we were not, let's say, aware of a venture capital industry when we started the company. We were not building the company for VCs. We had a mission that we wanted to see realized, and that's why we started the company. So from, I would say, 2019, when we started the company and launched it, to 2022, we raised virtually no money. We raised like $1 million in mostly angel money from a few renowned angel investors and then some friends and family and stuff like that. We used most of that money for like to fund the loan issuance, to fund the portfolio, to build some track record. So we basically bootstrapped the company from 2019 to 2022. That forced us to build a very efficient business, very automated business, because we had no excess resources to hire a lot of people and probably even invest in growth. So we had to be very creative during those first 3 or 4 years. And then in 2022, we raised almost a $4 million seed round from the likes of Clock Tower, Gilgamesh, FJ Labs, and Newstack Ventures, ESBC, and a few good angel investors as well. And then that's why the company really took off. We've grown the business by more than 10x since we closed the seed round. We've grown the business by 10x while at the same time keeping very, very strong economics, very low loss rates, very healthy customer acquisition costs, etc. So that's what the journey has been in terms of equity money. And then on the debt financing side, also a very important part of the business, we recently closed a $50 million debt facility with CoVenture, well, now called Travil. They recently switched names, but we raised a $50 million debt facility with them.
So you were talking about the journey too. In terms of the journey with Digit, at what point do you guys realize, hey, I think that we're into something here. I think that this could be exciting.
I mean, I think there were like different moments in which we thought like we're onto something. First of all, very early on, it was just me and my co-founder, Manuel. We had no technology, we had no money, we had no investors, whatever. And we just built a website with a loan application built in it. But we had no technology in any way. And so we were literally printing a physical contract and going to each of our first customers' houses to sign the contract, then went back to the office and manually did everything. And meeting those 82 customers in person and talking to them definitely led to seeing like, hey, there's something here, there's a need in the market, and there's an interesting business to be built around this model. And then I think there were, between 2019 and 2022, there were moments in which we were growing the business fast, and that basically validated that there was an opportunity in the market. But then we made mistakes around underwriting and collections and stuff like that, that made us notice that we were not in the right direction in many ways. And so we learned from those mistakes, fixed them. And then I think it was around late 2021 or mid 2021 in which we got to the stage in which we noticed that we were able to grow the business very fast, adventure speed, but with very sustainable and very strong fundamentals. Like we could grow the business very rapidly, but keeping a very low loss rate. We could grow the business rapidly, but keeping a very healthy customer acquisition cost, a very efficient operation. We could automate most of it. And I think that's when we had the confidence to step on the pedal and really accelerate the growth of the business.
So talking about the acceleration of the business too, we were talking about the earlier about the equity raise, but also to accelerate a business like this, you need the debt, you know, side of things. And you guys got the $50 million debt facility. So how does it, what is typically the process of being able to close something like that?
Well, first of all, I think you need to have a very good product from a lending perspective. Debt investors are mostly, you need to have a very different mindset than when raising VC money. Like VC money, you need to also sell the vision a lot and sell how big the opportunity is. in the case of debt investors, they only care about what actually has been built. Like, what's the performance of your portfolio? How will you acquire customers? What are the characteristics of those customers? So they are a very different type of investor in which their main goal is to eliminate risk in every possible way. They're not risk takers. So they need to limit the downside of their investment because their upside is capped. Like the upside for debt investors is the interest rate and probably a few fees that they charge you, but their upside is capped, unlike the venture capital money, in which the upside is uncapped really, but the downside is also going to zero. Debt investors cannot go to zero, so they focus a lot on building everything required to achieve that goal. So the process typically is having a few first initial calls so that they get to know the business, but then they go very deep into understanding the numbers, the performance of a portfolio, the financials. So the process from going to the first conversation to getting a term sheet is longer because they really, as I said, go very deep into the business and the numbers. And now after receiving the term sheet, it's also it's a very detailed, complex, deep due diligence process and structuring process. So in our case, we started conversations around October last year. And we signed the term sheet in January this year. So that's how long it took from getting to the initial conversations to term sheets. We were very successful in the way that we were very attractive to capital markets investors. So we got 9 different term sheets. We had some leverage to negotiate the terms and end up with a very good deal. And then it took us about 5 months from signing the term sheet to being able to do the first draw and signing the all of the formal documents, the loan agreement, the trust, the SPV, etc. So it was a 5-month process to get the deal done and actually being able to draw for the first time in June this year.
So obviously when something, you know, like it is like raising money or hiring or customers, it always requires a vision, no? So if you were to go to sleep tonight, David, and you wake up to a world where the vision of Digit is fully realized, what does that world look like?
Yeah. No, first of all, Alejandro, I love this question about your show, because I think entrepreneurship or starting a company is all about precisely trying to have your vision of a world realized because you're not happy with the status quo. And I think in our case, that vision would be a world in which, as a result of Digit's success and scale and influence, financial products in Latin America work in favor of people and not in favor of banks. I think a world in which fair interest rates are the norm, responsible and predictable financing is the norm, and financial institutions can be trusted to look after their customers' best interest. So, and of course, in this world, financial institutions are also profitable businesses, right? If not, that wouldn't be possible for long. So that's what we're trying to prove, that both conditions, like fair interest rates and successful financial institutions, can coexist.
So let's look now, you know, we're looking towards the future. I want to look towards the past, Steve, because, I mean, you had 2 companies that failed before this one, you know, where you're succeeding. And if you had the opportunity of going back and seeing that younger David that is coming out of IBM, thinking that he's going to conquer the world, start a business, you know, make it happen, what would you tell that younger self? What would be that one piece of advice for launching a business and why, you know, given what you know now?
Yeah, that's a great question as well. I think the most important one, I mean, there are many, but the most important one would be, like, first of all, just to enjoy the ride. Like, starting a company is very hard, but it's absolutely fulfilling. So I would say I would advise myself to enjoy the roller coaster that starting a company is without getting overhyped on the ups or over frustrated during the downs. I would say, like, it is a journey that requires a very balanced mindset in both situations. You cannot fall prey to your success when things are going very good and relax, but you can also not get beaten up and let's say destroyed by the bad times that happen very often as well. So I would say that enjoy the ride and keep a balanced mindset during the ups and during the downs as well.
I love it. So David, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
I think probably I'm not on social media, so probably LinkedIn, David Garcia Aceves. And my email is davidigitt.com.
Amazing. Well, easy enough. Well, David, thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an absolute honor to have you with us.
No, thank you, Alejandro. This is great. Thank you for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.